What's good, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Kinda Funny Games Daily. I am your substitute host, Andrea Renee, joined by... Are you still going by the Pure One?
We've retired the Pure One.
What's your new moniker, Tim Geddes?
It's just at Tim Geddes.
At Tim Geddes. Welcome, everybody. This is your source for nerdy video game news in the morning. You can join us live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames Monday through Friday at 12 p.m. Pacific time if Nick Scarpino ends his show on time, or maybe a few minutes afterwards. Or you can subscribe on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and watch it there as a polished VOD podcast. If you guys are watching live, we would appreciate you keeping Tim and I honest by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong, letting us know what we screw up as we screw it up throughout the show. And of course, if you want to write in and be part of the show, kindoffunny.com/KFGD. Tim, we have a couple sponsors on the show today.
Yes, we do.
We're going to talk about them later.
Amazing
though.
Sponsors, MeUndies and eHarmony.
Yeah.
Am I wearing MeUndies right now? Yeah. Am I wearing cheetah print ones? No. They're leopard print.
Leopard print's so hot right now.
It is.
We are going to go ahead and just get into some housekeeping before we get to the Roper Report. There are 4 episodes of Kinda Funny
MCU in review. The first 4 Marvel movies, all the way up through Thor, are available now on youtube.com/kindoffunny and podcast services around the globe. Just check for Kinda Funny Reviews from now on. Not just the Marvel movies, but anytime we do one of our, what we used to call Kinda Funny Reacts on the main channel, will be on this podcast feed for your audio listening needs.
That's great. Mm-hmm. I'm actually already behind. My goal was to keep pace with you guys, and I've already screwed it up.
The beauty is, it's real easy to catch up.
Yeah.
It's 1 movie a week. So sometimes, if you do 2 movies a week, you'll be fine.
Or you but do then, 4 movies in a weekend, you know.
And then you're fine, and then listen, you can catch up on all our beautiful ranking discussion. It's a fantastic time for everybody.
As you no doubt have realized, Greg is still out of town. He will be back next week. But until then, we're going to go ahead with... what is, and forever will be, the Roper Report. Time for some news. Today, we've got 3 items on the Roper Report.
A baker's dozen.
Excellent, Kevin. I love it. First up is one that I think we all probably saw coming. Miitomo is shutting down in May. So this story comes via Polygon. So Miitomo, Nintendo's debut smartphone app, will soon go dark. On May 9th at 12 a.m. Pacific time, Nintendo will terminate the Miitomo social network and all of its features, the company announced on the app's website. Users can no longer buy in-game currency as of today, January 24th. Nintendo will continue to provide players with additional coins and game tickets so that they can use Miitomo's various features until shutdown. Once Miitomo is through, however, that's it. Users won't be able to interact with any part of the app whatsoever. This is the full list from Nintendo of what will and will not work after May 9th. You will no longer be able to see your answers or messages. You will no longer be able to use items you've obtained in the app, such as clothing items, wallpapers, or posters. You can transfer your Mii characters to your Nintendo account by linking it to Miitomo. Its personality and other information will not be carried over. Sidekick Mii characters will be deleted. You can keep Sidekick Mii characters by saving them as a QR code before the end of the service. They can then be transferred to Mii Maker on the Nintendo 3DS family of systems or the Wii U console. You will not be able to view Mii photos, including Mii photos that you have shared to your social media channels, which is crazy to think about. If you want to save any Mii photos, you must save them to your smart device before May 9th. And Miitomo themed icons and clothing items used into your Nintendo account or the Super Mario Run game will not display after the service has ended. So just as a reminder, Nintendo launched Miitomo at the end of March 2016. The social network, which connects user-made Miis with their friends' characters to participate in game surveys and shopping, found early success, but interest petered out not long after release. Still, it set the stage for the rest of Nintendo's mobile game collaborations with developer DNA, including most recently Animal Crossing Pocket Camp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this news is definitely not surprising. I think it was more surprising to begin with that they even had Miis involved, but this was a pre-Switch time when this game came out. You can see now with the Switch, they're very heavily trying to get away from anything rhyming with Wii. So trying to get rid of all of that stuff, I think, makes a lot of sense for the Nintendo going forward, especially when the inevitable online service does come and we start to see what that could look like. The game, I never really liked it. personally, Miitomo, I downloaded it, played for with it for approximately an hour, and was like, this isn't for me. It's taken way too long to get things how I want them to look, and even if I did, there's not much there. But yeah. Based on Tamagotchi Life, or whatever it's called, the Japanese, Japan-only game that was on the 3DS, there was an audience for it, and they enjoyed it for what it was. But I definitely think that that was kind of Nintendo's kind of first step into the mobile space. And then we saw, obviously, Super Mario Run that kind of went the premium angle where, hey, we're going to charge. You'll get the demo, but then you have to pay the $10 to get a more. Was it $10?
Mm-hmm.
Let us know. Kind of funny you're wrong if I'm wrong about that. To get the whole game, and then, you know, some people liked it, some people didn't, whatever. At least it was an actual game. Right. Followed that up with Fire Emblem Heroes that people really liked and to this day really enjoy. And that kind of had the more typical mobile model.
Infrastructure, with the microtransactions.
Microtransactions being a gacha game, going from that. And again, people really do love that. Even now, if you look at any video game forum, if you look on a by-game basis, the Fire Emblem Heroes specific game forum threads are like the most popular on the whole fucking site for like Game Facts, for example. Then going into it recently with Animal Crossing Pocket Camp, it was kind of a mix of a bit of the different things. So Nintendo's still trying to figure out what the golden goose is in terms of how to make the infrastructure for their mobile games. But I like to see the experimentation. None of these games have really spoken to me. I think Super Mario Run was the closest, and I did have a really good time with that. But at the end of the day, it still wasn't as good as other games on the platform like Rayman Fiesta Run and Jungle Run or whatever it was called, because those games are fantastic. But I don't think anyone's really going to be upset about this news. And also, it's not really anytime soon. May 9th, we still got
a couple of months
to get your Miitomo on.
I mean, I think people who maybe dumped some money into the game might be upset about it, but this game like was so hot when it first came out. I remember for the first like 72 hours, it was all anybody was posting about. It was all over Twitter and Facebook, and like everyone was taking photos of their Miis everywhere. And there was the big fiasco with it draining iPhone battery super fast and how it wasn't quite optimized. And then I just like completely abandoned it. I was like, I just deleted it from my phone. I was like, this was cool for like a hot minute, and then it was done. And I kind of, when Animal Crossing was first announced, I was like, I kind of anticipated it going the way of Miitomo, and I'm hoping that it has a little bit longer legs. But already, I don't know anybody still playing Animal Crossing Pocket Camp. I think Gary Witta is the only one that I know here. Is anybody else in the office still playing Pocket Camp?
Joey. You still playing Pocket Camp?
Yeah, okay. Nope. Yep, she's not playing it either. Yeah.
Greg's definitely not. So,
I don't know if you guys are playing it out there. Let
any
us know.
Any of the Nintendo games, the including Pokemon Go. Let us know in the kindoffunny.com/KFGD if you're still playing Super Mario Run, Miitomo, Pokemon Go,
Fire Emblem. If you're like Alexa Ray and you've dumped hundreds of dollars in a Fire Emblem.
If that's your life, man, live it.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you know, this isn't sad for me personally. I think it's better for them to use those resources on bigger and better things. Mm-hmm. So,
and I also, like I was saying earlier, I do think it's good for them to move away from the Mii, from the Miis in general.
You think they're actually going to get rid of Miis as avatars?
I mean, there's not much. I mean, used to them now, right?
Yeah, but like, it's still your avatar on Switch is still a Mii.
Yeah. And we'll see. I don't know if that remains. That's a big question. Is that, like, these are the type of moves that I see as them being like, all right, we're trying to just get away from that. Maybe they'll have something new. Maybe they won't. I don't know. There's always something fun about having avatars. Like, I feel like making them and, you know, trying to get them to either look like you or look nothing like you is a lot of fun. And Nintendo knows that. And having the Miis be featured in different games. I mean, during the Wii era, it was I loved Miis. Everyone loved Miis. Well, at least everyone that loved Nintendo loved Miis.
That's true.
Everyone else did not. But having the Miis playable in Mario Kart, you know, even in Smash Brothers, having the Miis kind of as one of the characters and being able to play as yourself, like that was cool. But in where we're at now with the Switch and with the quote unquote new Nintendo that we're seeing, I don't know where Miis fit into all that.
Okay. I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I think the Miis aren't going anywhere. I think they're going to stick around. I mean, I definitely would like to see them do more with online connectivity, but I don't think it means we have to sacrifice the me for that.
I mean, seeing the death of Miiverse, seeing the death of Miitomo, seeing, it's just like there's a trend here, but I don't know.
I guess we'll have to wait and see. All right. The second item on the Roper Report. The next Dragon Age will be a live game, according to Mr. Casey Hudson. This comes via IGN. So BioWare's Casey Hudson has said that the in-development Dragon Age game will be a live experience, which means designing a game for continued storytelling after the main story. Speaking on Twitter, Hudson confirmed that the game will remain story and character focused, but added the idea of it being live afterwards. So he tweeted, "Reading lots of feedback regarding Dragon Age, and I think you'll be relieved to see what the team is working on. Story and character focused. Too early to talk details, but when we talk about live, it just means designing a game for continued storytelling after the main story." Now, we've known for a while that there's a new Dragon Age game in development. Over at BioWare, writer Alexis Kennedy confirmed the news last year, but BioWare declined to offer more details at the time. Executive producer Mark Dura reignited the conversation with a tweet that reminded everyone that the developer is beavering, that's the word, away on both.
What the fuck?
I don't know why they chose to use that phrase.
Word of the day, beavering.
As a verb. I was working on Anthem and the Dragon Age series, saying that there are people hard at work on both franchises. So I saw this news earlier this week that was like, oh, Dragon Age confirmed. I was like, we knew that it was confirmed to be in development, of course. But it's interesting that we now have some confirmation that it is going to be more of a live service game. Now, it sounds to me like this is a little bit different than what they're doing with Anthem. It sounds almost like what Ubisoft is doing with Assassin's Creed Origins, where they're putting out additional little pieces of story content. They have like the battle with the gods, and then they have the new DLC, and then they have another expansion coming out. I feel like that kind of model works because the open world is so massive that there's enough to do after the main quest line ends. And Dragon Age would be perfect for that. I mean, because those worlds have been very large and immersive in previous games as well. What do you think about the term live game? Do you think it's kind of like a trigger for some people?
Oh, 100%. I mean, even for me, it totally is, where it's just like, that's not good news. That's like hearing microtransaction, where it's just like, I feel like when you use words like that, there needs to be a but. Quality, yeah. Right? Like, and
well,
I think that I think
here.
Casey, it's a real nice butt. Like, yeah. It really is. I think him saying like, I think you'll be relieved to see what the team's working on. Like, he knows what he's doing. Like, they have their team. They know what they're doing. They understand that live is a bad word. They understand it's a trigger word. And saying it's too early to talk details, but when we talk about live, it just means designing. He's like, he's speaking directly to the people triggered. He's speaking to the people being like, hey, rest assured, if you love Dragon Age, we're trying to make a good Dragon Age experience, given the tools that now exist and with the framework that video games now have. Do I fully believe it? No.
Yeah, it's hard to go out on a limb and trust. I was talking about this on our show, which is going to launch tomorrow, about how after the incredible like distrust the EA's community has after both Battlefront and Need for Speed last fall, going into Anthem, as you and Gary were talking about yesterday, like the expectation is massive, right? Any kind of misstep and they're going to falter. They really kind of have to bring almost perfection in order to win back people who have been like, I'm burnt from what you've done to me with these games as live services. And so I feel like if anybody can bring EA back into the good graces of people who are not in the sports camp, right? I kind of silo off everything that's like Madden, FIFA, et cetera. If you think about just the other types of games that EA makes, like BioWare could be the studio that fixes it. But they really got to.
And even they shot themselves in the foot, though, with all the Andromeda drama.
True. I feel like a lot of that, you know, they came back from later, but the narrative was already beyond at that point.
And that's the thing. It's like whether or not they fixed the problem doesn't matter. It was too little too late because the news was out there and the kind of bad taste was already left in people's mouths.
But I have to imagine that there are lessons learned from EA after last year, after Andromeda, after Battlefront 2, after, you know, Need for Speed, after everything that happened to them last year and the consumer backlash. So that was so loud and so raucous that even Disney was like, hey, what's going on over there? That they've taken a look at that and gone, okay, we need to like fundamentally change how we're rolling out these games and what we're doing. And I'm glad that you and Gary talked about the idea that even though it's said, according to Jason Schreier's story, that it seems like EA wants to like put like a absolute hard deadline of March 2019 on Anthem, it would be great if that was not true, if that was just like rumor or conventional wisdom maybe, and that they actually let that game go through its full development cycle to when it needs to be, not when like, oh, we need to get this out. Because I agree with what you guys said, that if they push it out because it needs to get into the fiscal and it's not as good as it needs to be, it's going to ultimately backlash on them again. And yep. they can only withstand a couple more of these.
And the sad thing is, I feel like that's the easy bet, is to say that that is what is what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I'm holding out hope because I love BioWare.
Yeah, hold out for hope for sure. And like I was saying, Anthem has me interested. So I hope they don't fuck it up. But it's one of those things where I'm not going to expect them to not fuck it up.
Well, that's sad to me, Tim. I'm sad about that. I hope that something that we see potentially at E3 will change your mind. I don't think we're going to see anything from Anthem before then, or definitely not from Dragon Age.
I mean, honestly, it's one of those things with Anthem where anything more I see from it isn't going to change my mind. It's going to be when the game comes out and like seeing like what people are really thinking about.
The distrust is so deep in you that there's nothing you can see before launch that will change your mind.
I mean, my thing is I'm sold already. Like, my thing is, this game is so cool looking to me that it sold me on the thing.
Okay, so maybe I was misunderstanding what you were saying.
I'm sold on it as a game, but I'm sold on it just in the sense of, like, I'm down to give it a try.
Okay.
I'm not sold on buying it, and I won't be sold on buying it until it's out. Like, I don't think there's anything they can do or say or whatever that
I'm
can
so
change
confused,
my mind.
I'm so confused, Tim. Are you sold on it or aren't you?
No, I'm sold on as an idea. I'm sold on giving it a shot where I wouldn't have before. Like Destiny, for example. No matter how good Destiny is, I'm not going to play Destiny. It's not my type of game. Anthem's not my type of game. But despite that, I'm sold on the idea of, like, I want this game to be good.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is, like, something like Star Wars Battlefront, I was so excited for that. That was my most anticipated non-Nintendo game of the year last year. And it let me down in every freaking way.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I don't know. With EA, there's no reason for me to believe in them. Not a single reason at all. Having said that, Anthem looks really damn cool. So I'm hoping that they turn things around. Don't expect them to.
Okay, I'm still a little confused about your position, but...
The position is it looks cool.
Right.
I don't trust them. I want to be wrong, but I don't think I'm going to be.
Okay. Well, I'm going to maintain positivity and hope that it's going to be awesome. Don't let me down, Casey and BioWare. I believe in you. Speaking of EA letting us down and more stories, our third story of the Roper Report, EA DICE is reworking the Star Wars Battlefront 2 microtransactions. So this is written up via Eurogamer. The good news is EA DICE has bitten the bullet and is reworking the Star Wars Battlefront 2 progression system, having turned microtransactions off amid a storm of controversy last November. The bad news is we don't know how, and we won't know more until March. Quote, your feedback has been essential here, and we are preparing significant changes to progression that will address many of the things we've seen players asking for. We'll be sharing more details about these changes in March, EA DICE said in a Star Wars Battlefront 2 update. Significant changes sounds promising, and if they're taking this long, perhaps it really is a complete refit. Maybe star card abilities will no longer have anything to do with loot boxes. Nevertheless, by the time March rolls around, Star Wars Battlefront 2, already slipping from the public eye, will be 4 months old, and there's no guarantee the changes will actually be ready. But at least something is being done. To sweeten the deal, there's a fun-sounding limited-time game mode coming in February called Jetpack Cargo. This is for two teams of eight players, all equipped with jetpacks. It's frantic and fast-paced, according to EA DICE. So we all knew that these changes were underway. I think we were all equally like they did the right call by turning the microtransactions off. A lot of people, both in the kind of funny community and just in internet forums at large, were very skeptical of how they were going to be brought back into the game. And this doesn't honestly give us any information about how they're getting brought back, just that they are actually working on them. I think it's them just checking in with the audience to be like, hey, we have some DLC coming next month. Check it out just so you know we are working on this. The progression is going to change. I don't know how active the Battlefront 2 multiplayer community is right now.
I just tried looking into the sales of the game in the last couple months, because I know when it first launched, it was a lot softer than anyone really anticipated for it. And it was well short of what Battlefront 1, the 2015 one, sold. And I couldn't find any actual stats. So let us know, kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, if you have that information. What I did see was there was a lot of industry analysts saying that they expect the sales to pick up based on all the changes that they did make immediately, and based off of things like this. I don't know. It's interesting. I'd be very interested to see how the sales have been in January, and I guess it's only been January, like going forward with February, March, like going through, because
absolutely.
Star Wars is such a big name. Battlefront is also a name, and I think that in terms of the player base, like it being on both consoles, it being AAA, it being something that still has commercials during like sports games around the world, like there's definitely an audience that could latch on to this game. A lot of my friends that aren't gamers play it, so, and they don't give a fuck about all this loot box stuff because they don't understand it.
Yeah, I know people that love this game that did not know anything about the controversy. And I mean, I think that's important for people like us to remember. We're like knee deep in the video games culture on a day-to-day basis, but Star Wars is a brand that supersedes all of that. And December, obviously a big month for sales for video games, people giving, gift giving and things like that. So like you get, you know, people in a store shelf, like seeing Star Wars like in a GameStop or a Best Buy, you know, they don't know anything about the microtransaction controversy or the loot boxes. They'll pick it up. Yeah. And I think that if they do make a significant change for the better, that it could have a second wind, especially since DICE has committed to making all of the post-launch content free. And that was a big thing that they touted at E3 last year, and because they didn't want to split their community up between maps and things like that. And I think that if they can do microtransactions or loot boxes in the right way, that they could survive this. But clearly not the blockbuster runaway hit that I think EA was hoping it to be.
Yeah, I think that no matter what they do, it's too late to really solve the problem that they have. But yeah, I mean, we'll see probably some spikes here and there of regained interest in the game. But I don't think we'll see like a Rainbow Six Siege style resurgence for the game.
That'll be interesting. I don't know. It could. I guess we would have to see what their long-term like content plan looks like and how they're going to implement microtransactions. Yeah. March is, I guess, when we will find out more about that. But
man, the game let me down so much. I'm so upset about it.
You're still salty about it?
Yeah, man. Like, again, even from I'm just talking about the single player.
Yeah.
It's just like, it was such a letdown, such a major letdown. And like my biggest disappointment in 2017 by far, because how do you fuck that up? It takes so much intent to mess that up.
I don't know. I feel like Star Wars fans in particular are very finicky about that property. That there's no pleasing fans. Look at what happened with The Last Jedi.
Let's not go
you know,
there.
You would think that would have been a runaway success. Anyway, we digress. Not to say that it wasn't, for the record. Obviously, it made a lot of money, but I mean, there was a lot of people who did not like that movie at all. Okay, so Tim.
Yes.
While we have to wait for March to find out what's happening in Battlefront 2 DLC update and microtransactions, we do have some things that are happening today in Mom and Grop shops. Mm-hmm. Where would people go to find that out?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Do 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 do. Yeah, Kevin. All right, out today, Celeste is coming to PS4, Switch, and PC.
Let me stop you there.
Yes.
Celeste, by the makers of Towerfall, looks fantastic.
Did not know
2D
that.
2D platformer. Available on all the platforms you just mentioned. Coming to Xbox One tomorrow.
I believe it got a 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10 on IGN. Wow.
I mean, take that with a grain of salt if you want, but that's impressive. Wow. A perfect score is a rare thing.
Very rare. IGN does not give them out lightly. There's a question about that in reader mail that we'll get
to
later.
Get to it,
Celeste, congratulations, guys. I'm sold on it now. Let's do it.
Yeah, download that this weekend. All right, next up, Laws of Machine on PS4, Zero Gunner 2 on Switch, Strikers 1945 2 on Switch, Atomic Run Gun Jump Gun on Switch, Dust Off Heli Rescue 2 on Switch, Earth Wars on Switch, Fantasy Hero Unsigned Legacy for Switch, Kid Nikki? Radical Ninja Arcade Archives on Switch, Space Dave on Switch, Taken Project Switch, Tennis, just called Tennis. It's just the name of the game on Switch. World Heroes 2, another arcade archives from Neo Geo on Switch. New dates. What's his face?
Stop. Can we fucking stop? This is egregious. Why? Why are we getting 10 games on Switch? How many of these are good games? How many? Someone tell me how many of these are good. Celeste, 10 out of 10. Cool, let's stop there. We can stop. Do we really need Strikers 1945 2? I don't know what that is. I don't know what it is. But I'm willing to bet that between that, Atomic Run Gun Jump Gun, Earth Wars, and Fantasy Hero Unsigned Legacy, at least one of those is a piece of trash.
Why do you have a problem with more games being published on Switch? It's just more offering for people. They're not hurting you. They're just sitting there in the eShop waiting to be downloaded by somebody.
That's why. It's because let's keep them as clean as possible for as long as possible. Let's keep this trend of the good indie games selling better on Switch than they do everywhere else so that more good indie games are made and this can keep going instead of just like cash-ins. And again, I'm making a lot of assumptions here.
You definitely are.
But a game's called Tennis, Andrea. A game is called Tennis.
Now I have to Google this game.
Were they like, oh, Mario Tennis is coming to Switch. Let's beat him with Tennis. What's next? Just chess? Buy chess on Nintendo Switch. God. I just want to keep it sacred. I want to keep it good. Eventually, it'll just be nothing.
You want to be in a walled garden.
Yes. That's what I want. Secret garden.
Well, I don't know if I agree with you. I think the more the merrier. Obviously, we don't want a Steam situation on our hands, right? Where anybody and everybody is publishing. And clearly, Nintendo's pipeline for publishing on the platform is definitely more difficult than publishing on Steam. But I think it's good that there's a lot of these games that are going to get out there. And I was scrolling through the eShop just the other day when I was downloading Darkest Dungeon for Switch, which came out last week. And I saw The Bridge, which I never actually finished on any of the like 15 platforms that game came out on. And now I downloaded it for Switch and it's the perfect platform for that game. Sitting on the couch, playing this puzzle game. Did you ever play it?
No, I didn't.
It's on sale for $3.99 in the eShop if you guys are interested. Beautiful hand-drawn black and white grayscale art style. It's like an M.C. Escher puzzle game.
Cool.
Like it's really great. It's been around for a couple of years now. And it's literally on like 15 different platforms. So when I saw it in the eShop for Switch, I was like, this is a no-brainer. But I mean, I feel like that's what the Switch is great for small games like that. I'm going to disagree with you, Tim.
Okay.
Don't be such an elitist, Tim.
It's not so much elitist as much as it's like don't fuck this up. Like, there's a good thing going. Like, the more shit, the more it's going to be seen as, oh, it's a shit machine. We don't need shit machines. We need gold machines.
It's not going to be a
gold.
Shit machine.
I want Celeste. Give me more Celeste. Give me more 10 out of 10s, guys. Give me more Mario Odysseys. Give me more Zelda Breath of the Wild. Don't give me more tennises. I already have tennis. Mario's in it.
That's true. Well, that's not out yet. But speaking of new dates, Pillar of Eternity 2 Deadfire will be released on April 3rd. South Park, The Stick of Truth will become a standalone for PS4 and Xbox One on February 13th for $30. I'm not surprised they're doing that. I'm surprised it's taking this long. Obviously, that came out as a digital release if you pre-ordered. And it was a pack-in for the Fractured But Whole as well, right?
Yep.
And then Dead Cells announced for PS4, Xbox One, and Switch.
Yes. Oh, this game looks awesome. Yeah. If you haven't seen this game, look at a trailer. It looks fantastic. It's a procedurally generated Metroidvania style game. The pixel art looks super, super cool. I'm very excited for it. It looks awesome.
Lots of people on Twitter also excited about this. This was originally a Steam release, correct?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So now
give me
on
more
consoles.
Dead Cells. I want to see Dead Cells on these Switch lists. You know what I mean? Less tennis.
All right, deals of the day. Xbox Live Games with Gold for February were announced. We've got Shadow Warrior and Assassin's Creed Chronicles India coming to Xbox One. I really enjoyed the Assassin's Creed Chronicles games. I thought that they were underrated. So now you can pick it up for free next month with Games with Gold. And then on Xbox 360, we've got Split Second. Great game. And Crazy Taxi.
Crazy Taxi without the offspring, which is it really Crazy Taxi if it doesn't have the yeah? No, it's not. It's just Taxi. Just like tennis is just tennis.
But it's free, Tim. You have to pay no dollars for it if you are a Games with Gold subscriber.
I think it's on Game Pass, too.
That would not surprise. Oh, I mean, if they're on Games with Gold, why wouldn't they be on Games Pass, right?
Shout out to Crazy Taxi. I love Crazy Taxi. We should do a party mode of that.
One more deals of the day to celebrate. PUBG Player Unknown's Battlegrounds hitting 4 million players on Xbox One. All players who have downloaded the game will receive 30,000 free battle points to buy some stuff. And if you aren't playing yet, if you buy PUBG on Xbox One before January 31st, you will also receive 30,000 free battle points. So if you've been dragging your feet and your friends are like, come on, let's squad up. Get in before the 31st, you can get yourself some free points. You just get them? Yeah, you just get them. Every player in battle in PUBG on Xbox One gets 30,000 points to celebrate the milestone. What are you going to spend yours on, Kevin? Have you thought about it?
Clothes.
Do you have a specific piece of apparel in mind that you've had your eye on?
I don't think you get to pick. I think it's like loot box, right? Where you just, you put in 700, you get a box.
I don't know. I've never bought a loot box in PUBG.
Well, I mean, you acquired, like, it doesn't matter. I'm excited. I'm hoping for that, like...
Can you buy underwear?
Final Fantasy-style leather jacket. You know, the really long one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Sephiroth jacket.
That's
yeah.
the guy that I killed that one time. I took his jacket from him.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. That one time I played PUBG. Yeah. I'm going to play with you and Greg. We're going to have some fun. All right. So, now, Tim, yes. before we get into reader mail, you have some interesting information from our sponsors.
I do. This episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by MeUndies and eHarmony. Let me tell you about MeUndies. MeUndies says, you want to look good with your significant other this Valentine's Day? Then check out MeUndies Matching Pairs, a unique fun gift for you and your Valentine. They're the perfect balance of comfortable fit and exciting prints. Don't spend another Valentine's Day giving the same old gift. Check out MeUndies.com and find the best match for your match. I keep talking about how much I love whoever wrote this. I really do, but not as much as I love my MeUndies. This has started a phenomenon. I saw a Reddit blowing up talking about MeUndies. Everyone's getting on the MeUndies train, as you should too. MeUndies.com/games. You get 20% off your matching pairs, free shipping, 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go to MeUndies.com/games. This will be the best Valentine's Day gift that you will give. Start matching your bottom half to your better half. And the thing is, they have so many different styles, Andrea. Like every day I open up my drawer, I don't know what I'm going to get. Am I going to get the polka dot ones? Like, those are cool. You think polka dots are crazy? They're not. You know what's crazy? Alien heads. I got
Wait,
one with a bunch
alien
of
heads?
Oh, that's a bunch of alien heads all over, emblazoned across my body. It's fantastic. They're so soft, and they have the pouch, man. You can never ever give enough shout outs to the pouch.
Wait, which one's the best one? The boxer brief? Is that what you're talking about?
I'm a fan of the boxer brief.
I see that they personally. Also have briefs, boxers, trunks, and then the boxer brief.
They got a whole bunch of them. I'm a fan of the boxer brief because it's like, you know, it looks good. Again, it makes things look good. And that's what you need in life. And also, shout out to eHarmony, our other sponsor for the day. If you're trying online dating, chances are you've run into lazy text messages, dead-end conversations, and random matches that don't turn into dates. eHarmony is built to help you find lasting, meaningful relationships. It's not just a shallow hookup site. eHarmony uses years and years of science, data, and psychological research to send you the right matches. eHarmony brings compatible people together, like my friend Jess. And here's what Jess had to say. The sign-up process was super easy. They asked questions like, what four words would your friends use to describe you and how important super relationship traits are for you. They send you suggested matches in your email and it feels a lot more manageable than endlessly swiping on some other dating sites. If I was single, I would love to do this. I would just love to see what eHarmony, like what people eHarmony would suggest for me. Would they be like Gia Harris? Probably, because she's my perfect match and she is my perfect love. And if I nailed it, I'm sure eHarmony could have nailed it. Stop waiting and start your journey to a satisfying, meaningful relationship. It can be a fun way to play around with it can be fun to play around with online dating apps, but when you're ready to fall in love with someone and have a meaningful relationship, there's one app that's built to bring you real love, eHarmony. Come see how eHarmony can change your life. Go to eHarmony.com and get started. Enter my code GAMES at checkout. eHarmony.com, code GAMES. What's the reader mail, Andrea?
I'm busy looking at these MeUndies prints now.
Oh, so good. They're so good.
But I can look at that after the show. Mm-hmm. So there is quite a bit of things going on here. Let's hear from...
Give me some of that good shit.
Gotta get some good shit. Okay, here we go. From John Fick. Good morning, kind of funny family. On the topic of Sea of Thieves and how successful it will be, I think that this new beta has shown us something interesting. It was the most streamed game on Twitch on Wednesday, and most of those big streamers were playing on PC. I think we've all been sleeping on the fact that this game is also coming out in PC. I think it could have the PUBG Fortnite effect where Twitch viewers see their favorite streamers playing and having a blast, so they decide to pick it up on their platform, Xbox. With a PC release that streams well coupled with the fact that you could hop in for $10 a month with Game Pass, I think Microsoft has a pretty solid formula for success with this game. Who knows if it will pan out, but it should be fun. And I'm going to roll that into what Osama has also said. What's up, Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host? Long time, first time. Yesterday, I watched one of my favorite streamers, second to you all, Summit1G, stream Sea of Thieves to some 64,000 people. And holy fucking shit, this game looks so good! I had heard about the game at E3 this year, but it didn't catch my attention. I thought it might do well, but it didn't have high hopes. Well, yesterday, all of my expectations were blown away. I haven't laughed that hard in a long while. Not only did the game have a really good setup for a lot of hilarious interaction between crew members, but its art style fit the pirate theme perfectly and was genuinely gorgeous. I know they are playing on closed servers and a closed beta, but the game oozed polish. The UI seemed intuitive, the animations were fluid, and the sound design was great. There was next to nothing to complain about, and while it was obviously just the beginning of the game, it showed a lot of promise. But alas, I've gushed enough. My question to you all is whether or not you think Sea of Thieves can become a huge IP for Microsoft in order to shut up some of the naysayers about their poor first-party support. Do you think this game has the potential to be big enough to bring some goodwill back to the Xbox platform? With the game being incredibly stream friendly, much like PUBG, streamers could give the game a lot of free advertisement and promote the game to meteoric that's the word, success. Now, while I don't think this is necessarily guaranteed, I feel like this is within the realm of possibility for the game. What are your thoughts? Thanks for all the content and keep up the good work.
So you played a bit of it?
Yes, I played a lot of it yesterday, about 3 to 4 hours of it. So thank you both for your questions and for writing in. I was excited for Sea of Thieves based off what I played at E3. I do have some reservations about the game, and those reservations were confirmed for my play sessions yesterday. I agree with what Osama is saying here. The level of polish is good. There are still some bugs. Obviously, it's in beta. The graphics look beautiful. The ocean tech looks beautiful. Like, you just kind of stare at the water, stare at the sky sometimes, because the design is really well done. Really fun interactions. You can play instruments with your crewmates. You can get drunk on grog and then you throw up everywhere. You can throw up on your teammates. You can shoot each other out of cannons. The navigation aspect of it with the ship, when you have a full ship of four people, is really interesting. It's a little bit cumbersome until you get the hang of it, but like the idea of navigating on the open waters and using the map and using your, you know, little telescopes and things like that is really fun and very cooperative in a way that it kind of forces you to work together, because you can't be like holding the wheel and raising and lowering the sails and patching the ship if you get hit. You really do need to work with your teammates, and so that aspect of it is really fun. However, the part of the game that I'm really hesitant about, and that I tweeted to Rare about this morning, and they have not responded to me yet, is the PvP aspect of the game. This game is ripe for amazing co-op experiences of exploration and adventure. A lot of that will be kind of like, it's going to literally take the wind out of my sails if there's not a PvE option where I can just go and explore with my friends and go on treasure hunts and, and, you know, battle skeletons and sail the open seas. If I can't do that without the fear of somebody constantly coming to attack me, it's going to be a big bummer and a big letdown for me, because the PvP aspect of the game, which so far, but everything I've seen, it's only going to be PvP, kind of makes it not as fun. For example, we were going in to turn in some treasure chests that we had, you know, dug up and sailed out to find. We're at an outpost where some of the vendors are, and we turn in the chests, and I start getting shot. And I'm like, oh my gosh, who's shooting me? There's no enemies on the outpost. Mm-hmm. And it turns out another player just killed me. Just like straight up killed me while I was in what I thought was a safe space in a merchant area, which to me is like a giant red flag. Like, why on earth would you allow people to shoot other players like in a vendor area? That seems not right. Didn't like that. Heard a story from Britt, how she was playing yesterday. with Jason, and they had gone on a gathering of chests, and they had a couple chests on their ship. They were on the island getting something else off of the island, and somebody, another crew came along, sunk their ship, took their chests. They then ran after them and tried to get the chests back, and they ended up killing everybody on board and recovering their chests. But it's this idea that I want to be able to have the choice if I want to have that really interactive PvP experience where it's like, oh, it's fun having to go chase somebody down and then murder them to get my chest back. Or if I want to be able to have the really relaxing exploration to be able to be in this world, because they did such a great job crafting this environment and the seas and the islands. And it really kind of like makes me panicky that I don't get to like just explore it and have fun, that I have to constantly be worried about somebody coming after me.
It's a sea of thieves, Andrea. It's not a sea of friends.
I know, but like, I feel like it's such an opportunity missed, you know?
Yeah. I will see. Maybe there is more, because I saw another question. It's not here, but they're asking about how much like single player content there will be, and how many quests there'll actually be that aren't just kind of like, hey, you're with a bunch of other players. Go for it.
Right.
To answer the question of whether or not I think this game is going to be a huge win for Microsoft, everything I've been saying about it, I've been like kind of down on it. The Game Pass really does change that. Seeing it be on Twitch, like, I do think that this game has life, and I've been saying this forever, that the Let's Play community, the Twitch community, this was what this game is being made for, and that's a big part of gaming nowadays. Is it a big enough part to like make this one of Microsoft's kind of pillars? I don't think so. And maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. And I think that the Game Pass can totally change things, where so many more millions of players can access a game that maybe they wouldn't have played before. And maybe they'll fall in love, and there'll be communities playing this for years on end and being excited for a sequel. And it could be another one of those games that Microsoft gamers are hoping gets announced a sequel at E3 and things like that, in the same way people do for like Gears or Halo. But I don't think it'll ever hit that kind of point. I'm trying to think of like an analog on the PlayStation side that I feel like this will hit. Above Gravity Rush, you know?
No, I think it's way bigger than that. This is definitely a games as service feel.
Yep.
Like, they're setting it up to be something that is like a living ecosystem that people are going to continually be jumping into this game and having adventures with their friends. Even just like the small glimpse that the beta has given us, obviously like Rare went out of their way to say, we are specifically crafting this experience for the beta, which makes my mind go, well, what more is there? What are they holding back from us? And they did a nice job explaining a little bit of how to get around the beta in their blog post on their website, which, if you guys have not yet jumped into the Sea of Thieves beta and you're interested in doing it, I highly recommend checking out that post. You can find it from their Twitter page at RareLTD. It gives you a little bit of guidance as to what you're supposed to do. We, luckily, the first time I jumped in, got matched with somebody who had clearly already done like all of the introductory stuff. So they kind of like led the way for us.
Cool.
But if you don't get that, it can be a little bit confusing as to like, where do I pick up my voyage? How do I start my voyage? Which island am I supposed to go to? So they give like a little rundown of like, here's what you're supposed to do when you first begin the beta. And then from there, they're like, then, you know, explore as much as you want. But even seeing some of the items that are in the vendor, like some of the high level gold items, like the customizable outfits that you can wear, and like the fancy buckets and the shovels that you can buy, and that kind of stuff is really exciting. Like, the carrot is out there for like, this is going to be really, really cool.
Yeah.
So I definitely want to see where the campaign is going to be, though. I need to see some kind of narrative arc. Is it just exploration? Is this going to be another No Man's Sky situation?
Yeah. You know, now I'm thinking about it. So I was like, it's definitely above Gravity Rush. Until Dawn is what I'm thinking. That there's a chance that it'll be that type of game that is huge for a moment and then just kind of fizzles out. And is it a success? Yes, I'm sure Sony chalks that a success, but it's not going to be one of their pillars, right? With Sea of Thieves, I think it does have a chance to push past that. Don't think it's likely, but we'll see the tail on it.
Now that I've been playing it a little more, and I told Greg that I was very skeptical as well of this game breaking through, but quite frankly, the Xbox Game Pass news blows all of that away.
Yep.
The fact that they've now said you can get into this game for $9.99, I think that this game is going to take off like a rocket.
Yep.
Because it's just so much fun to play. And as Osama mentioned, there is the level of polish in the game is really well done. You can tell that they've been working on this game for a long time. Probably the right move by Microsoft to delay the arrival because, you know, we were supposed to be getting this last year. It looks good. I want to see more. I just really want a PvE option. Rare. If it's not part of your plans, please make it part of your plans. Add it later or something. I don't know. So thank you guys for writing in. Let's see. What else should we pick? Tim, is there one that you want to do?
I definitely want to hit Jordan and Scrawville.
You go for it. Read it.
Jordan says, hey, y'all. I have a question about sensationalism in games journalism, specifically relating to Jason Schreier's article yesterday about the pressure being put on BioWare. Immediately after posting his article, Schreier acknowledged his piece would be the birth of many sensationalized headlines popping up on gaming websites. Today, he even went as far as tweeting a screen cap of a video from The Know with the caption, like clockwork. I was wondering, where is the line between sensationalism and reporting drawn? Is it wrong to simply mention that Anthem is delayed, or is the issue in taking the next step and claiming that BioWare could possibly be in trouble? Thanks for your insight, Jordan Jones.
This is a great question. I think the sensationalism obviously is heavily tied to the idea of clickbait, and like a lot of media sites are purely run off of clicks and views, and their employees are incentivized to get as many clicks and views as possible. That being said, people need to also read between the lines. Technically, we don't know if Anthem is delayed. Even Jason said that.
Yep.
I mean, his sources are indicating that the game is that they want the game to be pushed, but EA's statement said that they are not commenting on his story, which means we don't have an official delay.
Mm-hmm.
It's just supposedly, allegedly delayed.
Yeah. There's a lot that goes into this. And as the guy that comes up with the majority of the headlines for videos across Kinda Funny and Kinda Funny Games, Greg normally does them for Kinda Funny Games Daily, but when he's not here, I do. And I do for the rest of the other shows as well. It's a constant question in my mind of, is this an accurate description of what's in this video? Like, clickbait is never the goal. However, enticing people to click on the video is the goal.
Absolutely.
So with what you're saying of like, yeah, it's you know, there's a lot of incentive to get people to want to click the video, but that's the whole point, right?
Right.
Like, you need to have a title that's not a boring title. There's also a lot of weird things that go into it with, in terms of how many characters are allowed and whatever. So using the word allegedly throws a lot.
Too many characters,
Tim. Where it runs things off and it's you can't see the whole thing. No one's going to click it. And then what's the point of doing it, right?
Right.
So yesterday is a perfect example of this. I had to think, what should the headline be for the video, the Games Daily video that talks about this story? And I wrote it out and it goes through drafts. Like, I do have a process where I think about it. I'm like, is this fair? Is this not that I think of myself as a journalist, because I'm not, but I'm like, am I doing a disservice to people by titling this one way or another?
Is it misleading?
Because, I know that I could totally put, like, Anthem's fucked, you know? But, like, that's not who we are. That's not what Kinda Funny Games Daily is. That's not what any of our products are. So it wouldn't make sense to do that. So I put the title, if I remember correctly, Anthem Likely Delayed to 2019.
Yes.
And I feel that that is a fair statement based on the article that we read as our lead story going through it all. And the word likely, I say, is worthy of being used because Jason Schreier is a credible source that I trust.
Yes.
And him saying that he talked to people saying that this is happening, it's not confirmed, but I believe that it's likely. I look in the comments, there's a ton of people saying, like, oh, clickbait ass title. It's like, is it really? Like, and I get that it's all subjective. There is no right and wrong when it comes to this type of stuff, like, objectively. But I just want people to know, I think about this stuff. And I think that where Kinda Funny Games Daily is titled is very different than Game Over Greggy Show, is very different than Gamescast, is very different than Morning Show. All those shows can have wildly different things. If we had a clickbait title for the morning show, I wouldn't give a shit because that show is chaos and stupid shit and people need to know that going in, right? But whatever. Clickbait's such a weird thing. And in terms of the sensationalism, it's like there's no way to sum something up in a headline ever. You need to look through. You need to read the article. You need to watch the video. You need to understand the context of everything. So I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough. I think that people right now want to dogpile on EA. I mean, EA's been like the easy punching bag for several years now. Like, they're the big bad publisher who always is screwing up and never does anything right and doesn't have their consumers' best interests at heart, right? And so, like, it's a narrative that's easy to latch onto because people want to see EA go down. What I don't want to see is the devs to go down. I don't want to see EA go down. And so, like, I think that when Jason does a story like this where it's like there's so much pressure at the studio and is BioWare in trouble, I mean, people want to believe the narrative that they've created in their head. And a lot of the times we get it wrong. We on this show get it wrong. Jason sometimes gets it wrong, you know, because we don't have the intimate access at the developer that we need to have the full picture about what's actually happening at the studio. And that's problematic for us because of the nature of the reporting that we're doing. You know, like, video game reporting is complicated because there are gatekeepers to the industry, and a lot of the times we have to work through those gatekeepers to get access and to get information. And if you do anything to piss those gatekeepers off, then you're, you know, prevented access. I mean, Kotaku has been blacklisted from several publishers. I mean, sometimes they get their access back and sometimes they don't. But I mean, Stephen Totillo has publicly talked about that more than once, about how they'll do a story on a specific publisher and the publisher will then pull their review codes or pull preview event access. I mean, and that's something that, you know, it needs to be figured into a lot of this coverage too. So yeah, it's tough. I agree that we, as people who are on the media side, need to be vigilant about making sure we're not being misleading. But sometimes we get it wrong too. And I think as long as we like own up to when we get it wrong, then hopefully you guys don't lose faith in us.
And so looking at the actual tweet that Jason put out with the screen cap from The Know, their headline was "Delay: BioWare struggling to fix Anthem." And in my opinion, it's like, if you know The Know and you watch The Know, that's what they do. Like, they have titles like that that get you. It's like watching Philip DeFranco. Like, it's the points to get you in and then listen to the context, and whether or not you agree with that, that's where it is. I don't think that that's a clickbait title based on what that video is promising for them to talk about. They talk about it, and I bet they talk about it in that voice because that is their voice.
Right.
On Games Daily, we have a very different voice. We try to put things out as experts in the field. The Know doesn't do that. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Before we move on, I just want to let you know, I see an update in this Twitter thread that I, when I tweeted to Rare.
Breaking news.
Daily Kong has responded. She's the community manager for Sea of Thieves. She says, I believe we don't have plans for safe areas, but Joe Neat1 may correct me on our stance. And she tagged the EP for Sea of Thieves, and he has not responded. But she said, I think we want to keep the risk factor there. Hehe. Keep things tense.
Yeah. Man, all these Dang. Social justice pirates needing their safe areas. Come on, guys. The next one I read was from Scrawville. Hello, I have a question about IGN and scores today. I saw that IGN gave the new indie platformer Celeste a 10 out of 10. Seeing a perfect score from an established place like IGN really made me give this game a closer second look, and I'll probably get it on the Switch. From your experience, what happens when a reviewer wants to give a perfect score? Does that get discussed further internally with the editorial team, or is it really up to whatever the reviewer decides? A 10 out of 10 from IGN is a big deal and definitely makes a weighted statement. I'm curious how much deliberation goes into giving out those perfect scores. Thanks for all you do. So I was at IGN for 5 years, and I'm sure that Greg would have a lot more insight in terms of his personal experience, because I never reviewed games there. He did review games, and he did give a game a 10. So we can revisit this next week when he's back and for his perspective. But for what I saw while we were there is, it really depended on who was reviewing the game, how long they've been there, their kind of seniority and title, and how much responsibility they really had within the editorial team. There was multiple games that were given 10s while I was there, and some of them it was totally a, hey, in all cases when I was there, the person that wants to give it a 10 brings it to other people and is like, hey, I think this game is a 10. Here's why I think that. Let's have this conversation. Because it does mean a lot for IGN to give a game a 10, right? And then they kind of have that conversation. But at the end of the day, it is up to the reviewer and what they're saying once they're at a certain level. So I remember like Richard George, for example, gave Zelda Skyward Sword a 10. That conversation happened, whether or not people agreed with him, the game got a 10 because he was the one reviewing the game and he gave it a 10. Right. And he was of a stature at IGN that he can make that call. But then there was other games that other reviewers, like I didn't recognize the name of the guy that reviewed Celeste. So I'm sure that that went through a much more rigorous, like, checks and balances type situation where people are like, hey, are we sure about this? Are we going to put the stamp of approval on that? But there is definitely a lot of thought put into it. There's definitely a lot of due diligence done to make sure that if IGN gives a game a 10, it is there. IGN stands by that and stands by the reviewer giving that score.
It, perfect scores are so rare because it's so rare that a game is perfect. I mean, I know that sounds obvious, but I mean, I think about all of the games that I've played in my career or just as a fan, you know, before I started working in video games, and think about games that were like truly perfect experiences. And even though they might be my favorite games, they wouldn't be a perfect score. You know, like I think about a game like Rock Band 2 is one of my top 10 favorite games of all time. Not a perfect score game, but a great game. But I think a game like Portal 2 is a perfect score game. But like, how do you like determine like what makes it perfect, right? Mm-hmm. Like flawless, like it's like, and this comes back to like everything we talked about in Game of the Year discussions about, it can't just be fun. It can't just be popular in order for it to be a perfect game. It really needs to, I think, check the boxes of game development and game technology, as well as narrative and art design in order for it to be perfect.
We disagree here, but again, right, but 10 like, out of 10 doesn't mean in terms of IGN score, does not right, mean perfect. But
we're talking, we're talking about reviews and like it's a perfect game.
But it's not though. That's the thing. At IGN, 10 out of 10 does not mean perfect. It means it's a masterpiece. And that, like, there's their whole grading scale. It's
right. This is why I don't score video games, everybody.
And that's why we don't score them either. But the like IGN's whole rubric, it says 10 out of 10 is not perfect. A perfect game does not exist. So going off of that, it's there is a lot of nuance there.
I think a perfect game exists. I think there are several perfect games. But I digress. All right. We probably have time for one more.
Yeah, let's do one more.
Let's see here.
We're out.
Yeah, right? We could just be out.
Yeah, unless we go. I'll read this one to round it out real quick. Zach Wagger says, let's just cut to the chase and save time with a long question with some perspective thrown in. Tim, you've recently said you've really enjoyed Injustice 2 for its story and how it makes you play through as different characters you probably wouldn't have played as, right? With that being said, Subspace Emissary. That story from Super Smash Bros. Brawl was my first experience as being forced to play as characters I wouldn't have touched at all if given the choice, especially since I did co-op with my brother through the entire game. The story allowed for such fun cutscenes that weren't being held down by any Nintendo rules. Why is Captain Olimar teaming up with Captain Falcon, who's driving the Blue Falcon around some forest? I have no clue, but this is reason enough to play as them. The cutscene with all the hero ships charging out of the bad guys' ships was probably the first time I cussed in front of family members when I let out, fuck yeah. I just want to hear thoughts from the host on the criticism this story got, especially since that led to Smash Run and Tour in the next generation. Thanks a lot for that trash. Or what's one game that has a story you really, really cherish that is usually scoffed at? I entirely agree with you. Subspace Emissary is fantastic for all the reasons you've said. The cutscenes were so much fun, just seeing all the wacky, random Nintendo-ness happening. The gameplay of it was fun. I think that the reason people hate on it, and I agree with a lot of the hate, is it was a little too long, and it should have doubled down on all the Nintendo charm and more of the adventure mode from Melee, where they actually used stage layouts and stuff from the Nintendo world instead of having all the weird kind of like just purple generic Smash Brothers bad guys and arenas. And yeah, Smash Tour and Run were horrible. And I don't know why they decided to do that. And it felt very lazy to me. And I hope that the next Smash Brothers does have a great story. But I agree with you that it was a great excuse to play as different characters and go through and have everybody and understand who you wanted to main. And good for you, Zach. Enjoy your Smash Bros. Subspace Emissary. Don't let anyone tell you any different.
Yeah. I don't have an answer for your actual question because I would need to think on that.
Yeah, just games, stories that people don't like. I don't know. Some people don't like Final Fantasy X story, and they're stupid, but it was that.
I guess it's just, they're just stupid.
They're just stupid. They're dum-dums.
All right. So with that, we will now go to Squat Up. This is where you can write into kindoffunny.com/KFGD. If you need somebody to play with in online multiplayer, you can give us your gamer tag, your PSN ID, your Steam handle, your Nintendo friend code. Let us know what you want to play. Today, Andy on Xbox One is asking the best friends for help. His gamer tag is Andy, A-N-D-Y, Mac. M-A-C 9995. Again, that's A-N-D-Y M-A-C 9995. He says, I need help on Cuphead. Had it since launch and can't get past the blimp flying level. It's driving me insane. If anyone wants to squad up and help, that would be great. UK would be best because of the time difference. So if you guys have mastered Cuphead and you are playing on Xbox One in the UK, maybe you can reach out to Andy Mac 9995.
Andy Mac out.
That's right. All right. So, Tim, you have your phone ready? Are you doing this?
I do.
If you are watching the show live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, we need you to help us by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. And this is where we will try to make our wrongs right.
Yes.
Tim, what did we screw up today?
Awesome-tastic says, Tamagotchi Life was not Japan only. Here are the release dates. And came out in Japan in 2013, North America in 2014. Blah, blah, blah. That comes from Wikipedia. Colin Alexander D has a real important correction here. He says, early in the show, Tim mentioned that Nintendo are trying to avoid anything that rhymes with Wii, which is flat out wrong, considering Bayonetta 3 does, in fact, rhyme with Wii.
Ooh,
you got me there. You got me there. Lord of Pwn says, Andrea was wrong. Tim made an excellent pun when he said Andromeda, and Andrea did not laugh nor acknowledge it. Please correct this. Thank you.
Sorry, appreciate Tim. That.
Colin Alexander D says beavering is a colloquial Canadian term for working hard, very, very hard, much like the noble beaver.
Does sound like a Canadian thing.
Yeah. Normally we don't read bullshit like that, but you know what, Colin, you did good today. Hold on, this one has a lot of info. Nope. K-Bab says, an important release date was missed today. Pokemon Crystal for 3DS. I'm pretty sure that comes out on Friday.
Let's see.
Because I'm very excited about that. Pokemon Crystal, one of my favorite games of all time. Berserk says, Tim, there is in fact a chess on the Switch. We've hit rock bottom, ladies and gentlemen. Ron Dean Barron says the Crazy Taxi on mobile as part of the Sega Forever program does have the original Offspring music. That's great.
It is indeed. Pokemon Crystal version is out on Friday, January 26th for the Nintendo 3DS.
There's one thing I know. It's Pokemon Crystal facts. That's it, man. That's it.
Oh, that's good.
We did pretty good today.
Nice.
We did pretty good.
Excellent.
Bayonetta 3 does rhyme with we. It's a fact.
We love that you guys hit us with the hard hitting facts.
Yes.
Of puns and rhymes here on Kinda Funny Games Daily. Thank you so much for joining us today for Thursday, January 25th. Tomorrow, Tim is hosting with
Andy Cortez. The power couple is back, ladies and gentlemen.
But you guys have been waiting all week for Candy.
Number one
Andy.
Games journalist, Andy Cortez.
Don't forget, you guys can subscribe to get this on YouTube at youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. We are on our march towards 300,000 subs.
We're marching ever so slowly.
That's great. And shout out to Watch Mojo. Thank you so much for including us in your top 10 YouTube gamers of 2017.
And What's Good Games.
Yeah, that's right. We're both on the
pretty
list.
Pretty damn cool.
So
shout
thank
out to
you.
Watch Mojo with their always quality lists.
Oh, yeah. Listicles, man. All those top 10s. Check them out if you guys want to. And I think that's it. Do you have anything else to add, Tim?
That's all I got. Have a good day, everybody.
It's been our pleasure to serve.